All right, everyone. Welcome to another episode of Free For All Live on a Thursday night, presented by grumblingsmedia.com. I am your host here for this libertarian gab fest, rather. I am Big John, joined tonight, of course, by my co-host, as always, the very good and very present Mr. Hody Johns. Hody, how are you doing tonight?
Oh, I'm never able to live up to your hype, John, but I'm good, right? Not great.
You're good.
I'm good, you know, and I'm happy to be there. Excited to be talking to you and to John.
And just like ZZ Top, everybody loves a well-dressed man, absolutely, and without a doubt. Okay, so tonight we're going to be talking about a different type of show. It's sort of like a catch-up show of sorts. In the midst of all this Liberation Day stuff and Trump's tariffs and how we're going to destroy the world economically, et cetera, let's take a step back and talk about our health. Let's talk about making America healthy again. If, in fact, we were not healthy to begin with, we'll talk about that tonight. And, of course, that means a retrospective sort of look, the first couple of weeks of Robert F. Kennedy Jr.'s stint as Secretary of Health and Human Services. And to help us along in this discussion, former Libertarian Party presidential candidate, a friend of the show, I'd like to say, he's been on here a couple of times already. He agreed to join us again tonight, Dr. Charles Belay. Dr. Belay, how are you tonight?
Fantastic. Thank you, Big John. I appreciate it, Hodney. I appreciate it. It should be a great discussion.
Yeah. Let's hop right into it. It's always good to have a learned opinion instead of just listening to whatever comes out of my mouth and Hody's mouth. Okay, so let's start off with the basics. RFK Jr. on March 27th announced a significant restructuring of HHS and its subsidiaries, so to speak, like the CDC. They're cutting 20,000 full-time positions from HHS and CDC, from a total of 82,000 to roughly 62,000 employees. This figure is a mix, right? It's 10,000 people who were let go outright, 10,000 people who took sort of a buyout slash early retirement, call it whatever you want. But the net result is they're down 20,000 full-time employees, so roughly 25% of the workforce. Specifically, CDC is going to lose roughly 2,400 employees. That's 18% of its staff. And that's part of RFK's plan, he says, to refocus CDC's efforts on epidemic and outbreak response. So having said that, now, Dr. Belay, let's start off with you. Given the combination of being both a doctor and a libertarian, how do you feel about HHS cutting back its workforce?
Well, I mean, I think your government needs to be more efficient. And I've always preached that, you know, public-private partnerships are great. The federal government's necessary. I mean, the role of the federal government, I'm going back to the whole Bill of Rights, is you take care of the American populace, and that's their role. It's not to try to decide, you know, what kind of food we're going to eat and et cetera. I mean, our job is to take care of people. And so, you know, if the whole goal of RFK revolves around the fact that we're going to make this more efficient, we're going to cut costs so that we can become more efficient and take care of the people, then I'll be for it. I think you have to get into the weeds to figure out, you know, who gets cut when. You know, if you use it as an example, going into the DMV, you see, you know, countless workers that may be there that don't necessarily they're not necessarily efficient, right? So if he's cutting non-efficient personnel, great. If he's starting to cut persons that are actually, you know, watching, you know, disease processes, Ebola's, the myriad of various infectious diseases, et cetera, if we're starting to cut workforce that has utility, then that's a big problem. And that's not going to keep America healthy.
Right. And Hody, so I guess the devil's in the details, right? Like, I think I tend to say as libertarians, but just as responsible people, right? If there's government bloat, I think we can all agree, let's cut that bloat. And I think for the most part, if you go into any government agency, there's going to be bloat. I mean, we don't need Elon right to tell us this. We don't need Doge to show us this. As far back as I can remember paying attention to politics, in the 80s, 70s, 80s, I remember saying government is, if you want something to die a slow, horrible death, you let the government do it, right? So right. I think we're okay with saying, let's get rid of some of this bloat. But do you feel this bloat is being done haphazardly? Do you feel
this should be done with a scalpel, not with a club? I mean, as of today, I was walking out, you know, having left the hospital, and in, you know, just to check the news, and it wasn't on Twitter, but it was just a reputable news source, and it's like, oh, by the way, we made a mistake, and we're going to hire back some of these employees that we've let go. And it just seems like that's just sort of haphazardly, let's fulfill a quota that's been given to us by the above, and let's get rid of these persons, you know, en masse, only to find out that, oh, wow, we need this particular division of people, et cetera. And that's not good for morale. That's not good. It makes you look incompetent.
Yeah. And Hody, though, isn't that indicative of someone who runs startups for a living? Like, really, the small business, the startup really operates in that fashion, right?
Yeah. I mean, this is one of those things you know not to do as like a small business, but government kind of is notorious for this. Now, as a libertarian, I want to cut government all the time, but there is a way to do this tyrannically. Great example, Black Wall Street. All of a sudden, we go from being like, hey, the police will protect you, but we're not going to protect these people down here. Well, that's not fair. And so while we say, oh, it's smaller government, there is a bunch of crimes they're not investigating. Police forces do this all the time. Whenever there's one person who's got to get cut, it's the guy who's investigating all the rape kits, right? So all of a sudden, we're just not investigating our rape kits anymore. Whenever a school system has to cut back, do they cut all the administrators, the two administrators, every one teacher? No, they're firing teachers, right? They're the ones on the chopping block. And so actually, I'm going to turn this back to the good doctor here, because one of the issues that I have with these, like the club versus scalpel thing, is perfect. So we're cutting 9 of the 29 current people who at the FDA who review food safety. That, okay, great. I want it to be small, right? But that's going to make everything more difficult to get approved now. It's like cutting, you mentioned the DMV, you know, that all of a sudden there's one person operating it instead of two. And so your 1 hour wait time goes from 2 hour wait times. And so with RFK now closing the Gross loophole with the generally recognized as safe foods and him saying, okay, so there's no more generally recognized as safe. FDA has to approve absolutely everything. Well, now that you're downsizing the number of people who can actually review the foods, what are they going to do? Yeah, it's going to take forever, right? Am I putting right. this together right? I'm just trying to
you
understand
are.
It, you know?
Okay. Yes, you are. I mean, the idea behind it would be to create efficiency, but you know, the problem with that is there's no government agency that's necessarily efficient, right? I mean, so how are you going to do that with less people? Now you have probably morale doubt to some degree, and now you're going to ask these particular persons on a government salary to work harder at what cost, when potentially you could just go to the private sector and actually do well. I just don't see it working.
And when you look at things like this, it's okay, let's cut the workforce. But like, I think too many people have been affected by Elon, right? So you hear the president say this, you hear a lot of people in the cabinet say this. Oh, look what Elon did with X. He came in there, he fired 80% of the people. The company didn't collapse. And then when he figured out he accidentally let go of two or three people he actually really, really needed, you know, he paid them more to come back or whatever. And that's fine for a small business, right? At the end of the day, if X is offline for a day or two, a lot of us may lose our minds out of boredom, but it's not the end of the world.
That's right. But I think Elon kind of screwed himself in the sense that, you know, at least from what I see, I mean, I talk to people and they tell me everything, right? But you look at someone like this who's a multi-billionaire who's actually made much of his money off of the backs of the American public. And now you're coming in cutting jobs and persons who are, you know, considered quote unquote non-essential. And he made enemies, and he made enemies really quickly. I mean, that's self-evident. I mean, you know, I mean, if you read any publication, news article, et cetera, that's not biased towards Elon, it's going to show that there's a good deal of hate towards the guy right now. So unfortunately he probably had a decent idea, but the overall execution of that idea was a bit too voluminous. It was probably too stern. I think he probably he fired too many people with a club as opposed to a scalpel, and consequently it's going to come back to bite him.
Yeah, and when it comes to things in government, yes, the government is the Titanic at worst, right? Like the most you can hope for is like these incremental changes in direction, right? You're not going to do a full 180 with the government. It's impossible. And if you do attempt to do a full 180 with the government, what's going to happen is people get hurt. Wars will start. It's inevitable if you try to have that drastic a change when it comes to the federal government. So small victories where you can. And I think when you're talking about HHS, I will be cautiously optimistic, and I will venture a bet that I'm probably the biggest downer on RFK on this panel. But on this particular issue, I will give him credit that if he has truly identified 20% of the workforce that was truly administrative, paper pushers, middle managers, whatever.
I don't think you can do it in the time frame that he had set out and fired people. I don't think you can identify persons that quickly and get rid of them. I just don't.
Really?
I mean, running any business, you cannot identify the bad people with a few days in the job. I mean, I just don't see it. I mean, first you have to become very accustomed and literally, you know, become that organization before you can start cutting. And I think that's a bit premature. I mean, I totally get it. Yes, downsize, libertarian, you know that, you know, but to be able to go into a business and suddenly say, we're going to just do it like that. Yeah, I think it's a bit presumptuous when you're dealing with people's health and the largest health organization in the world, from mind you. I mean, you know, this isn't just us. It's the world.
Right. Is it possible, though, that he may not have identified good and bad performers or, say, overperformers and underperformers? I agree with you. There's no way to evaluate that in 2 months. Right. But is it possible that he's doing this by the nature of the position? For example, the second project manager on every project, right? Like, okay, let's not have two project managers. Let's have one. I mean, at that point, you're not evaluating the individual. You're evaluating the value of the position, right? So, I could go in there and say, I don't need two project managers right now. Let's get rid of 50% of the project managers, double their workload. That's still an 8-hour day for most of them, 8 to 10-hour day, like in the private sector. I think you could accomplish something like that. I won't say he did or he didn't. I'll say I'll reserve judgment and hope, give him the benefit of the doubt and say, okay, let's do it. But since Hody brought it up, let's segue into the next one. He's pushing to close the GRAS loophole. Now, that when you expand that acronym out, so let's make sure everybody understands, that's when the FDA says something is generally recognized as safe. And this allows food companies to self-certify additives as safe without a mandatory FDA review. And let me tee it up for both you guys, and then you guys can go on and talk, right? So let's say we go by the old Milton Friedman model, which is that the FDA should be an advisory body only. It's sort of like the halfway house for libertarians, anarchists, and classical liberals, right? It's the halfway house. All right, you want to have an FDA. It's there to advise. And its job is to advise on the safety of the drugs and the additives, right? It's not there to advise on the efficacy, and it's not there to either approve or prohibit something. But the FDA exists and says, hey, we tested stuff, and this drug will not kill you. The Hippocratic Oath, right? First, do no harm, right? So the FDA will certify that this drug that Pfizer or Novo Nordisk wants to put out does no harm. But it has no other authority. If you want to take it, take it. If you don't want to take it, don't take it. Hody, how do you feel in general, before we get to the GRAS loophole, because I think it'll tie in, how do you feel about Uncle Milty's definition for an FDA? Would you be, you're probably the most anarchist among us. How would you feel about an FDA that serves only in an advisory role, not a regulatory role?
Wonderful. If that's the extent of the way we're doing it, I feel wonderful about that. If they just want to give people warnings and just be like, just so you know, guys, before you take this, we're not going to regulate it, but before you put it in your body, here's something to know about it. Great. Of course, I'll never love the fact that government is involved and coerced and everything like that. And I'm sure they've got their big business buddies and they want to put warnings on this, but not put warnings on that. But if they have no actual power to regulate, then I can get my information from the people I trust the most. One of them being the government, you know, if they want to advise me and I want to trust them, one of them being some psychotic YouTuber, then great, you know, but ultimately that it comes down on me. You know, the potential victim, right, trying these things. So I would love that. I love that vision that you painted out for it.
And by the way, Hody,
as a compromise.
Yeah. And we kind of have case studies of that, cigarettes being the prime example, right? The FDA says you got to put this big thing that says smoking the cigarette will give you cancer, lung disease, emphysema, and you'll likely die sooner than you would have, right? But smoke them if you got them, right? So that is the case study of what I'm describing. Dr. Belay, how do you feel about that sort of potential vision for the FDA?
I agree wholeheartedly. I mean, like, I get that without trying to regulate certain chemicals, substances, et cetera, you may see people get harmed, but it's their body, so it should be their choice. I mean, you know, I mean, the cigarettes being a prime example. How about alcohol? I mean, you can go down the list of both, you know, regulated and illicit substances could you know, fit that bill, right? And then if you say what's regulated or what's generally recognized as safe, I mean, at what point do you say it's safe? I mean, what committee is going to say that this is safe? Because anyone could watch Twitter or
X,
YouTube, or I mean, X, or you name it, right? And they go look at all, and you find all these conspiracy, like, you know, this is going to cure what have you, eat 1,000 milligrams of turmeric and, you know, you're going to alleviate this ailment, right, et cetera, right? And at what point do you have to shut these people down? So, you know, I would think that overall stance is more authoritarian and not aligned with the libertarian value at all.
Right. And so when you're looking at this generally recognized as safe, right, I think what we're talking about things here are things like food dyes, right,
But where do you stop? The problem with most things in the government is that, you know, where do you stop? You can say, hey, look, I want to have cameras to look at license plates, and if children are going to be abducted, we can find them quickly. But at what point can the government use that for more nefarious purposes, right? So everything that you do as a government needs to be looked at for both beneficial but also detrimental should a different power take the reins of the government, right?
Right. Cody, it's the classic, like, if you think you're going to do good with this special law or power, just that's not what you should be thinking of. You should be thinking of what if the worst person on the planet got the same power you're claiming. Then if you're still okay with it, then you should accept it. Not what if the nicest person gets a hold of it, right? It's what if the worst person gets a hold of it.
So as a government, as a private person, as a private company, you're subject to civil litigation, et cetera. So, I mean, that's fine. But a government shouldn't necessarily have those powers.
So where do we stand on – so if we all of us seem to agree, like, hey, the best model of an FDA that we might be able to hope for is an advisory board, not a regulatory board. I think all three of us kind of aligned on that. Say, let's use that as our sort of like North Star for the FDA. Given that, should there be a GRAS loophole, Hody, should there be such a loophole, or should it just be – hey, that's just part of the go ahead and advise on it, but don't regulate it. So let's just bring it out all in the open.
I mean, personally, I just unfortunately, this gives more power into the hands of fewer people, right? And this is what is under the disguise of small government. This is a centuries old tactic, right? I fired my lords and ladies and also increased the amount of tax on those lands, right? And so now you've got more power in the hands of fewer people. And so when we're closing the generally recognized as safe loophole, I was actually excited when I first read this because I was like, oh, cool. So now as opposed to getting this warning, like, I don't know if it's safe or not, they're just going to say it's safe and whatever. But it's the exact opposite. Now those foods will no longer be considered safe. And as you mentioned, Big John, this is two things that you could do to get generally recognized as safe. One is if it was a common ingredient before 1958 that showed no adverse effects prior to 1958. Right. And second is if you just produce a lot of scientific procedural materials that show that the food is somewhat safe, right? And I like that, right? I like being able to be like, people took it and had no adverse effects from it, or I put this through rigorous scientific testing and there was no adverse effects with it. The problem now is since we're closing that, the FDA is going to have to recreate these tests that have already been done, or before 1958, we've just plain observed that they don't have negative effects. Now, is he going to maybe find something? The hope, of course, with RFK Jr. is that he's hoping he's going to find something like Red 40 that actually was recognized as safe, but it's actually super duper dangerous and killing millions of people limiting your lifespan by, you know, so decades or whatever. I don't think that's going to happen. But even if he does, I don't want him and the government to be in charge of it. As you noted, Big John, one of the themes of this show is the power that you give to who you think are the good guys is going to be in the hands of the bad guys eventually. These guys get to determine what's safe and what's not. And I'll turn it to you, Doctor, because I think you have probably seen many instances of times when the FDA or CDC approved something that really was dubious and blocked something that really was not dubious at all. And I don't want that power, right?
Or vice versa. You may find something that you think potentially could be advantageous to a patient who's, say, stage four dying, and you can't use it, you know, consequent to the fact that the FDA has not allowed you to do that. So it works both ways. It's not singularly, you know, for it or against it. I would agree with both of you wholeheartedly. That gives power, you know, more power to a fewer individuals, and at what cost is that to society, right? You know, I don't see it, and don't forget, this costs money. I mean, if you're going to like have to prove that your product is safe, you know,
right,
where are these funds going to come from? Which then goes back to, let's all rah 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 small business people. Well, I don't know many small business people that are going to be able to afford these massive studies to prove that something necessarily safe. Right. So now you've now thrown big agriculture back into the hands of big agriculture, if you want to go food wise. Right.
Yeah. And, you know, I both of you could give me your reactions, but, you know, the proponents of FDA as a regulatory body will always point to what was the medicine that pregnant women took in the 60s that caused
thalidomide.
Thalidomide. I keep forgetting thalidomide. Yeah. So whenever you talk to someone who is a pro-FDA as a regulatory agent, they always cite thalidomide. But right. Milton Friedman brought up in one of his lectures, one of the greatest libertarians, he's the guy who made me a libertarian, he said, the only reason thalidomide wasn't available in the U.S. is not because the FDA studied it and said it was dangerous. They were just so slow in their approval process that the European regulatory agencies actually approved it way before the U.S. even got through its testing process. It was just dumb luck that the delay worked out in favor. But then he pointed out that when the rest of the world had approved statins for use, the FDA was behind the times on that. So you could argue, well, how many people died because they were denied statins in the 70s when it was available everywhere else in the world? So, you know, it cuts, to your point, doctor, it cuts both ways. In some cases, the overregulation ended up being beneficial, and in other times, it ended up being detrimental. So on the whole, I don't know, like, I don't know statistically what the answer is, to be honest with you, on the whole, if it's actually helped or hurt. But I think to your point, like, make it an advisory board. You still get the warnings on the medications. You'd still get the warnings about cigarettes and alcohol and weed or whatever else. And then make your own decision. So I think that's, by the way, if anyone out there has any questions for Dr. Belay, myself, or the Hode Man, please feel free to hit us up on whatever platform you're watching this, YouTube, Rumble, Facebook, X. We'd love to answer your questions. So feel free and hit us up. All right. Moving on to the next topic here. RFK Jr., as everyone knows, is a infamous vaccine critic. He likes to play off every so often that he's got an open mind about vaccines, but let's be honest, his mind was made up about vaccines a long time ago. That being that I don't think he really believes in them. I think he believes they cause more harm than good, and for the most part, they should be avoided. On March 19th, there was a measles outbreak in Texas. There were 146 cases, one child death. RFK tried to play this off. He said this is a common occurrence. It has nothing to do with vaccination rates, and he still proposes and encourages vaccine skepticism, especially around the MMR vaccine. Doctor, give us a little bit of, if you can, try to give us a synopsis of what the issues are with MMR. Do they cause autism? Do they cause an increase in adverse reactions? Are parents better off not vaccinating their children with MMR as opposed to with MMR? Why don't you, I know I threw a lot at you, but go ahead and talk to us about that.
So look, I'm an ear, nose, and throat physician, not a vaccine expert, but I mean, I've gone to med school and you've read papers, and what you want to see is true data and controlled studies to determine, you know, the efficacy or not. And what one's taught, and I've not participated in these studies, these were long before I had even gone to medical school. Is that, you know, the vaccine works with no, you know, no association with autism, et cetera. This has been sort of litigated time and time again from what I've read, and the countless articles would say the same. You know, obviously with autism, people are looking for a cause, right? So I can empathize with the parents. If you have an autistic child, I get it. But to throw one's weight into vaccines as a causative factor, as opposed to the innumerable other, you know, societal sort of exposures that one has in this day and age, I think is asinine. I mean, I think RFK's problem is that he's a plaintiff attorney and he's always fought in this particular realm. And if he's trying to fight for the kids, God bless him. But at the same time, I don't believe him. I think trying to give people misinformation that potentially can harm kids is just not, as the head of HHS is heinous. It's just not, it's not right. You know, I would pray that with AI and with all the data now that gets thrown into systems, et cetera, we can figure out exactly what it is, what genetic abnormality, what environmental exposure, is it a combination? Who the hell knows, right? But somebody can figure this out. But to simply lump it into some sort of, vaccination that's then going to sway person's opinions, that's going to let children, you know, the most vulnerable people that we have in this world, our population, to let them, you know, fall into harm's way is just not really ethical. I don't see it. You know, I mean, on a daily basis as a physician, you have to hold someone's hands and try to give them guidance. And you may be wrong. You're giving the best information you can on any given day, in any given situation. Right. Letting them know that you may or may not be right, but you're trying your damn best to preach that this is the causative factor to make people make bad decisions, as I think is a bit ill-guided, so to speak, particularly in lieu of the fact that there's, you know, this person's had been at the helm of, you know, the largest organization in the world that fights against, you know, heavy metals, et cetera, that is quote unquote known to cause autism. I think there's a conflict of interest, which you try to, you know, if you were to write a paper and have such a conflict of interest and put it into a medical journal, it would probably be dismissed, right?
Yeah, and it's also kind of ironic that the folks who fall on the side of RFK will always say, well, man, you got to follow the money. You can't be, everyone's bought off by Big Pharma. Yeah. My response is always like, well, who's being bought off by big litigation? RFK is, right?
I would love to know if there is a cure for cancer, like this grand cabal that they sort of, you know, had suggested. I would love to know what this cure is so that we can help people. Because I go into it with a glass is half full as opposed to half empty. Most persons that go into healthcare, doctors, nurses, you go through the whole slew of allied health personnel. I mean, people are in this to help other individuals, not to figure out how they can game the system. So I think that really kind of hurts doctors, nurses, allied health persons to hear this sort of rhetoric that is not aligned with helping people.
Right. Well, it's part of any, in my opinion, it's part of any grand conspiracy theory because, you know, to get as to learn enough to be a doctor, to be a researcher, to be a surgeon, et cetera, takes a lot of effort, a lot of studying, a lot of dedication, which most people don't have, and most people will not attempt to get that information and knowledge. And I think the internet being a double-edged sword when it comes to information, right? It's all readily available, but it's open to interpretation. There's no wise old man sitting or old woman sitting in front of you to tell you where you might be straying. And it kind of leads to these conspiracy theories that as long as they're not self-contradictory, people will buy. And sometimes when they are self-contradictory. So Hody, I know there's a lot of guys out there, a lot of people out there when it comes to vaccines, not just the MMR vaccine, but also just like, you know, the HPV vaccine, obviously the COVID vaccine, that are just like, hey, if it's a vaccine, it's unnatural, it's got to be bad, and you know what? It's all to put money in Big Pharma's pockets. Therefore, we will not take it. Now, talk to me about that mindset. And also, if that still would change your mind about choice when it comes to vaccination.
I will be the first to admit that this is one of those where I am too dumb to know, right? Like, I haven't been in the rooms where they have – people say do your own research. Oh, on a vaccine, what are you doing? Like, do you have the germs, these microscopes? Are you injecting your dog? Like, what are you doing, right? Like – the unfortunate thing, and I'm sure Dr. Bally can talk a little bit about this, is that we've been lied to by both the conspiracy theorists and by the proper medical industry. Like, and it's scary for somebody like me because I have to trust somebody. I'm dumb, right? Like, I'm dumb on this issue. I don't know. Even if I'm smart, I lack the technical equipment and timetables in order to like investigate these claims fully. So all right. I can do is observe with data. Now in RFK's defense, now RFK has killed people with his stance on vaccines before. American Samoa, there was two children who died because of an improperly prepared measles vaccination, right? Two babies dead. And they suspended the vaccines for a year, and RFK Jr. was all over it. And if you look into this, he, you know, visited, he was writing to the minister, you know, prime minister, like talking with the government officials and everything about maybe getting this banned forever. And during that time, I think 86-something babies died of the measles outbreak. Now, what did RFK Jr. learn from that? Now, while he was critical, you actually saw in his confirmation hearing, he walked back a lot of the stuff that he said. And actually, just after this first child died in Texas, I actually have a quote here from him. He said, vaccines not only protect individual children from measles, but also contribute to community immunity, protecting those who are unable to be vaccinated due to medical reasons. It's a very RFK thing, like thing to say, but he's aware of how this blew up in his face. He tried to diss himself from the American Samoa thing. He said he had no responsibility for it. Everybody saw through it. And he's aware that he can't have another PR disaster like that again. So he's walking it back a little bit. But I guess the question that I want to turn to you, Dr. Ballet, is I'm just trying to, what should somebody like me do when I see factually people in coats, numerous accolades, and yet they get caught lying under oath, you know, or they're in the pockets of big businesses or something like that. And then that's I've right. got these conspiracy theorists who ended up being right about some things like Wuhan Lab and whatnot right. like that, but then way wrong about their recommendations. I don't know what to do. So what do I do?
You have to find somebody you trust. I mean, the whole idea behind the premise behind medicine is do no harm, right? Are there better ways to probably go about doing some of these vaccines? You could check, you know, check titers after one as opposed to a series, et cetera. Sure, but it becomes a, you know, a cost benefit ratio for society, right? A, there's not the time. B, there's not the money. And then on top of that, you're looking at herd immunity for a lot of these vaccinations, right? You know, I'm a big believer in, you know, it's your body, your choice when it comes to like the COVID type stuff. But you have to understand that the premise behind some of these vaccinations was for herd immunity. So you cut down the amount of whether it be virus, bacterial, et cetera, in the community. So less people are going to get hurt. The unfortunate thing is when you stimulate somebody's immune system, somebody somewhere is probably going to succumb to the adverse effects of it. Right. So it's not going to be an unheard thing. That goes with pretty much, you know, if I were to give you a shot of lidocaine and do that for the next 10,000 people, somebody may have a problem. Right. And that's not a vaccination. I get it. But somebody's going to have an allergic reaction to it. Right. And those things do happen. And that's unfortunate. And so you're playing the game of are you treating necessarily the individual or you're treating the society? And much of medicine has been let's treat society. And it's only going to get worse because, I mean, we're having less persons going to the allied health profession, right? You're having, you know, and now it's a matter of how do you treat our aging population? And we're using AI much more because you just don't have the one-on-one time with anymore because of the way that medicine has now evolved, courtesy of our federal government getting involved and now making it so that it's more of just a mundane, like, all right, you're a number in this whole system. And that's mm-hmm. something that our federal government has created, which many physicians are adverse to, and this is a problem that you know it's kind of funny. The federal government puts its nose in pretty much anything when it comes into healthcare, and it kind of screws it up. This is part of the reason why we had the opiate epidemic. You know, you had to ask people, "Where's your pain on this happy scale?" You know, from a frowny face all the way up to a happy face. And if you're somewhere in the happy, you know, frowny face, here's your shot of morphine, right? So, I mean, you know, in many ways, the government it was complicit in causing this scourge in America that many people don't want to admit.
I mean, I hear what you're saying, but it's one of those things that I myself am like Cody. I'm torn a little bit, right? I'm by no means a virologist or, you know, or anything like that. But, right. You know, you kind of say like, okay, but I've been in other fields where I see parallels in other fields, right? And that I put in my 10,000 hours and I listen to people who have not put in their 10,000 hours. Right. And the things you hear, because you happen to be an expert in that one particular field, is 80% of what you see on X is nonsense. It's not absolutely. A higher percentage, right? But it sounds convincing. And right. to the point, like, I mean, just as a flippant example, today I saw Charlie Kirk. He puts up a chart and he says, look at all these percentages. This is how the world is hurting us with tariffs. It turns out the numbers were almost completely fabricated. They were inapplicable to what he was saying. But yet he has millions of followers, and a large percentage of them are repeating that nonsense. But there's no penalty. There's no penalty for him putting up the wrong data and therefore drawing wrong conclusions, right? Now, you might say, that's just Charlie Kirk and or anybody, and they're just making a political point at the end. Who does he hurt? Blah, blah, blah. But now you're doing it with science. You're doing it with medicine. These are things that have adverse effects, right? Measles was...
But that's a consequence of information. I mean, you know, the,
agreed.
The pulpit is given to many people that don't necessarily or should not necessarily have the authority to speak on various subjects, but now they're experts, right? And that's unfortunate. I mean, an example, if you were to want to make pretty much any substance, if you take the time and you learn your organic chemistry, you can go into most, college libraries and find your, Journal of Organic Chemistry or what have you. And you can figure out, how do you make this particular compound? And it's just a matter of, will you spend the time to learn so that you can actually, then use the information that's out there to actually go through it, and produce, right? And so when people speak out of turn, you just kind of have to shrug at them and say, if someone's silly enough to listen to this, that's their prerogative. It's not my body. It's their body, their choice. I get it. But accept the consequences. Don't come and complain if it doesn't work or if you have any adverse effects to it. You see that. I've seen that recently with a person who bought into the whole ivermectin business, right? And you're like,
right.
You think it's going to work, and this grand cabal that's going to try to hold the cancer therapies against you, but it's not going to work. There's a reason why medicine is trying and trying and trying to come up with solutions to these problems. And it's unfortunate, but that's just the way it is right now.
Well, my answer is always like, why wouldn't they just hoard the – if ivermectin cured cancer, why wouldn't the pharma company that produces ivermectin hoard it, sell it at 100 times its cost, and cure cancer, right?
Throw a side chain off of it, and right, somebody throw an extra carbon on the molecule and call it something else and sell it, right?
By the way, organic chem is what prevented me from going to medical school, just to let you know. You're absolutely right. It's like as soon as I took two semesters of that, I was like, I am done with med school and any crazy dreams I had of having MD after my name, doctor. So I take my hat off to you on that. And just very quickly, that's why we're seeing diseases like measles, mumps and rubella that were essentially eradicated in the United States and around the world, that now they're coming back. Like we're seeing in some cases 89% instead of 99%.
The herd immunity is not there, right?
Yeah.
And that's hence the problem. I mean, yes, you can attribute it to people coming across the border that weren't vaccinated, but ultimately it comes down to herd immunity.
Yep.
Right? If all of Mexico or Ecuador, et cetera, were vaccinated, you would not have seen this outbreak probably. I don't know that for sure. But it's a herd immunity issue, right?
Right. And listen, herd immunity doesn't mean that everyone – it's not a natural substitute for vaccines. What – herd immunity, people forget. People die attaining herd immunity in some of these cases, right? And one of the cases that this happens is our next topic here, which is the bird flu. RFK Jr. suggested letting the bird flu, which is H5N1, run through the flock, quote unquote, rather than relying on mass interventions like vaccines or culls, alarming experts, according to NPR. So far, 55 human cases have been tied to dairy cows, and he argues, meaning RFK, that natural immunity could suffice. And a lot of libertarians are saying, see, he's right. He's trying to cut down on government overreach. However, the CDC warns that H5N1 has a 50% mortality rate in past outbreaks. That means one out of two people that get this will die. And that demands action, not waiting for herd immunity. So Hody, what do you think? Is this a case that RFK starts off by saying, let it run its course, take some vitamin A or whatever it is that he thinks you should take, ivermectin, go talk to Joe Rogan, whatever. We don't need to warn people. We don't need to get these infected chickens off the market. We don't need to let people know about this. It's 50% mortality. Let it run its course. Does this challenge your libertarian hands-off beliefs?
No, if anything, this is going to show what the market can do. I think we need to practice in handling things for ourselves. I think there's this statistic at one point that the average American believed that 1 in 4 people had perished from COVID, and yet we were still like the least vaccinated nation. Like we were the most fearful that they had killed people, and yet that fear did not lead to actually getting like a vaccination or anything fixed. So on one hand, I think that the CDC is kind of doing things a little bit again when they said what it's up to a 50% mortality rate in this bird flu, something that I guess apparently has happened before. Like I said, I need to educate myself more on the history of bird flu. A 50% mortality rate seems bananas to me, but saying that's possible, then I would say you're kind of bonkers if you don't get it. Yet I have heard rhetoric like this from every outbreak that there's ever been. Right. From in fact the bird flu before, dating myself a little bit, when people said this is going to be a world-ending event, and you know, 13 people died, a few people got sick, it was just a flu, you know, and it was like, okay, well, is this just another like exaggeration? But I do want to say, like, and maybe this is something Mr. Belay can kind of talk about when we talk about the bird flu strategy and what to do here as like a society, because I do want that herd immunity. And I hear libertarians talk about natural immunity, and I see very little difference between the two. I think in one, it's we want people to go outside, catch a very small, weak dose of it, and then get immune that way. And isn't that what a vaccination is? You get a small, weak dose of it. And like, you know, it's like forcing the natural immunity. Maybe I don't understand that correctly, but to me that seems to make sense.
So you go back to this is outside of my league as far as what I know. But sure. I mean, if you're dealing with an attenuated virus, right, that is exactly what you're talking about, as opposed to some other substance that's going to cause a reaction or portion of the portion of whatever it is that you're trying to, bacterial virus, et cetera, that you're trying to cause an immune reaction towards, right? So you're correct in that regards, but you know, it goes down to, do you protect those most vulnerable, i.e. the elderly, those with, you know, dysfunctional immune systems, et cetera. And that goes back to, you know, speaks for, you know, how does one go about looking at society? I mean, that from a libertarian perspective, it's difficult because it's your body and it's your choice, but it depends on how you go about looking at society and your overall role in relationship to those around you. Do you subject your body to something that is potentially, you know, if you want to call it caustic, et cetera, knowing that potentially it's going to help those around you or not? And it's you can call it selfless, you can call it selfish, depending on how you go about thinking about this. But it really is kind of a personal decision that our society probably has to wrap its head around, because if not, we're going to hear a bunch of malarkey from various organizations that may or may not be true. And it's just kind of where you stand. And I don't know if there's necessarily a right on this one. I mean, depends on, you know, what side of the aisle you stand on. Because if you, you know, are you going to go get that vaccination if you know you have the flu, or you have the potential to get the flu, and you have a, you know, 95-year-old grandmother that's got lymphoma? I mean, the answer to that is you're not going to go around her. Or yes, you would be vaccinated, I would imagine. It just depends. And then the other thing is, most of this stuff becomes socioeconomic. It's really nice to say it when you have access to the best of healthcare at any given, you know, the snap of the fingers. You know, RFK can probably see somebody, you know, at the best of institutions in our country. But if you pick somebody up from the backwoods of Louisiana that doesn't have two nickels to rub together and they need to see a doctor, it's a 3-week wait. That's a whole nother ballgame. So they may choose to be vaccinated because they know they're not going to have the resources or time or expertise to actually get help should they need help. It's not a decision that I think society can make for any one individual, because we're all a bit different from a socioeconomic standpoint and healthcare standpoint, et cetera. We're all in different positions right now.
And one of the things that's a conundrum, and I admit this is difficult, and whereas I am firmly on the anti-mandate, I just don't fall in with the crowd that automatically assumes that if it came from government, must be evil, or if it came from big pharma, it must be evil or part of a plot. So I had a question for – I actually posed this to Rechtenwald when I was interviewing him before he kind of went off the deep end a little bit. And I asked him, I said, okay, you're anti-mandate, you don't believe in vaccines, et cetera, as a good libertarian. But I said, as a libertarian, how do I demand – compensation from someone who infects me? right? So it's usually framed in the case of, I don't want to put anything in my body. I don't want to take this vaccine. It's my body, my choice. But what if my body, my choice results in my getting someone else sick? Yeah. Like, what's your libertarian response to that? Do you just take me, is it a tort issue? Is it, do you take me to court? Like, if the guy who infected me is still alive, do I take him to court for damages, for making, you know? So it's not, in my opinion, Hody and Dr. Belay, I don't know that it's as clear cut as my body, my choice, as it is, like, say, with alcohol or with heroin or with marijuana or whatever. Because for the most part, unless you go on a killing spree or whatever, you know, you sitting in your basement smoking weed does not negatively affect someone else directly, right? If I have COVID, if I have the bird flu, if my immune system is good, but I come and cough on you, or if we're in the same supermarket and I cough in front of you on the line and get you sick and you suffer because of it, what compensation are you entitled to?
Well, these cases have already been out there. I mean, they've had persons that have known HIV that go infect, you know, countless individuals, knowing that they're going to pass this or have the potential to pass this virus around, right? This is not new to society, right? So what happens in these cases?
Well, in those cases, those were like actually prosecuted, if I recall, in the 80s. Right. They were prosecuted as attempted murder, right? And again, this is an interesting discussion, but in those cases, they were able to narrow down who the culprit was, right? So when they did the sexual history and they were able to regress, you know, encounters, they would say, okay, here's patient zero for these six people who got infected with HIV. And they could trace it back to that person. At that point, it was also moot because it was essentially a death sentence for everybody involved. But in this case, it's not necessarily a death sentence. It could just be you made me miserable for 4 weeks or I lost my sense of taste because you infected me.
That's right.
Hody, how would you handle that conundrum philosophically? What would you say to that?
Sure. This is one I'm kind of excited to talk about because I feel like libertarianism is just – libertarianism is like government stop it, non-aggression principle, right? Like get off my lawn and stop doing stuff. What do we do when we have a situation that requires a community that comes together? Right. Like and the idea that this must be government is wrong. The idea also that doing nothing is also wrong. And this is where culture needs to take over, where politics fails. And this is something the reason I said, like, we need practice at this kind of thing is coming together as a community because we haven't had to do it for so long. We've just given the power to government, make us do the right thing, make us save money for retirement, you know, in the worst way possible, make us help the poor in the most wasteful, ludicrous way possible, you know, make us do these right things. And I want us to get practice in saying like, hey, when there's a disease and the government doesn't take care of it, we still need to act. We still need to do something, but we don't need to do so with political force. Political force is actually one of the least influential ways to change somebody's mind. So when we actually talk to people on a cultural level, when we try to change their minds about something, it's a completely different and open conversation. And you're much more open to making lasting changes in your life when you care about your neighbor and you say, I don't want that person to get sick. Unfortunately, you look at this rhetoric when we try to promote or propagandize the COVID vaccine, right? It was, you'll never get sick again. We had like three like major officials say, you know, you'll never get COVID if you take this thing. I know that I can't. You won't get sick, right? This was not phrased as a love your neighbors kind of thing. In fact, they'd arrest you if you were surfing in the middle of the ocean,
right?
Like this was framed as a very authoritarian thing. But if we reframe that and say like, hey, listen, this is my grandma and I just don't want her to get sick. Oh, okay. Well, things change a little bit. You know, we had a church. And what changed for us? Listen, it's a church, a lot of conservatives there. But when it's like, hey, listen, I want Martha to still receive God's blessings, but I don't want her to be at risk every week. Is it cool if we have like some cameras and do some things online so she doesn't have to be at risk? Hey, who in my community wants to help get her groceries there, make sure they're disinfected before dropping them off at her doorstep? There's great ways to take care of this thing that don't involve government. So libertarianism is step one. What do we, where's the start? First, do no harm, as they say in medicine, right? First, do no harm. But that doesn't even begin to explore the depths of the solutions that we can have within the umbrella of liberty. Liberty doesn't offer a specific solution, and I won't lie and say that it does. That's right. The advantage, is we get every solution at our disposal and get to choose the ones that are most effective, as opposed to saying, daddy government, please choose one solution. Please double the money it would actually cost. Make sure all your crony allies are in charge of it. Waste a lot of the money. Kill a bunch of people in the meantime. And then hopefully that solution looks somewhat acceptable. That's right. Kind of my feeling on this.
Yeah. And you know, you're right, because and again, I'd like to also kind of throw something else in. It's especially in today's world, libertarianism has almost become synonymous with anarchy. And I don't mean that as a pejorative. I just mean that's the association a lot of people have with libertarianism, right? Like, it has to be no government. There are a lot of those grades between no government and minimal government, right? And someone, again, like a Milton Friedman would tell you, okay, I don't have much use for government. But of the few uses I do have for government, one of the primary ones is to protect people from aggression. Protect people from aggression by its own government and protect people from aggression from other people. So, and I'm wondering if Milton Friedman would say, and I think I've seen a couple of his old lectures where he did say this, actually, which was, public health might be, in his mind, one of those functions for government. Like in the case of outbreak, whether it's, you know, COVID or if it's Spanish flu or bird flu or AIDS or whatever, that maybe government does have a role to play in that. I don't know. It's an interesting question, gentlemen. I will tend to fall towards maximum choice wherever, especially like, say, during the COVID thing. You know, I personally took the vaccine, but if someone didn't want to take it, I was like, don't take it. Fair enough. At least let me know that you didn't take it and we can make decisions for each other, you know, whether we're hanging out or not. But it's an interesting I don't think it's getting solved anytime soon. But I like Hody. I like your response to Dr. Blay. Your response was appropriate as well. OK, let's move on to the next topic. RFK is big on living a clean life, eating the right foods, stay away from junk, as I think is good advice. I don't necessarily fault him for having those positions. But he wants to now start mandating things from his position. He's complained and blamed food and environmental pollution for chronic illnesses like obesity and diabetes. He's pushing reforms for things like pesticides and ultra-processed foods. He's got studies allegedly that link things like that to health declines. He quoted a 42% U.S. obesity rate, according to the CDC. Is that the role of the Secretary of HHS? I'll toss that out to you guys. Like, it's one thing to say, look, we all instinctively know. I don't think there's anybody on the planet that says, you know what, drinking a six-pack of Coca-Cola, Pepsi, or 7-Up every day is a healthy thing. At the same time, should they be mandating or severely criticizing the ability for someone to drink soda? And I'll throw this in since we're a little short on time, making the famous, like, we're not going to allow SNAP recipients to buy soda and other unhealthy treats. Let's start with you, Dr. Belay. What do you feel about his position sort of like issuing these edicts?
You know, I mean, so doing this on a day-to-day basis, it's very easy to – I mean, I think he sounds like a Democrat in that regard. So I'm going to control your life, right?
Right.
And, I mean, that is a Democratic stance.
Well, he is a Democrat, after all.
He's a Democrat. That's right. I mean, because I'm going to tell you how to live your life and take it. I think it's very easy for someone who's lived the life that he's lived to be able to make these sort of make these assumptions that people can afford it. But from a socioeconomic standpoint, sure. If you know, many of my patients, if they were afforded the life that he's lived, and this is not, you know, outside of his family, you know, death, et cetera, but literally to have the money to do what he's done, they would probably be healthier individuals as well. They have access to health care. They have good foods. They can, you know, exercise when they need to or when they want to. They don't have, you know, the family they have to take care of that lives in the, you know, Cancer Alley on the Mississippi River. They live in a better, you know, climate. I mean, you go through the whole litany of things that would make someone healthier. And it's really easy to preach that. And, you know, and if a few people get helped by this, God bless, that's great. but I don't think it's going to work in the sense that you're trying to regulate something that, you know, physicians on a day-to-day basis around this country, nurses, physicians, et cetera, I don't mean to just say physicians, they preach to their patients, you know, you have a diabetic who comes in with an A1C of 10. And you're like, my God, listen, you know, let's talk about your foods and you talk. And then, I mean, I do this as an ENT and, you know, and I'm supposed to get them a nutritionist, et cetera. Let's get you nutrition. Let's get you back to your internal medicine physician, et cetera. And it falls upon deaf and ears, or in many cases, it can't. These people are living on Social Security checks and they just can't afford it. And you can make the argument. Sure, you can. You have a yard and it's fertile and you have alluvial soil. You can grow a garden. You can go through the whole, you know, list of ways that an individual could better themselves. But that's pie in the sky stuff for somebody who doesn't have the resources to do it. So, you know, so yes, do I think our food supply is a bit tainted? Yes. I mean, I lived in Europe for a bit of time and it just seems like you could always be a bit leaner. But at the same time, we don't have the foresight to say, hey, look, you know, down in the state of Louisiana, we don't have good public transportation or means to be pedestrian, so to speak, right? I mean, most of Europe is pedestrian, so of course you're going to be healthier. You walk, you go eat. You don't eat a meal and sit on that lazy boy and watch TV. You eat a meal and you go for a walk. I mean, that's just what you do. You're told to do it. I mean, it's a different way of lifestyle. You have, you know, more family kind of input into things that are healthier. You're outside more. You know, you don't have to work as much, you know, behind closed doors. You're out in the sunshine more. You go through the whole, you know, when you're off, you know this, when you travel from Europe and you're off for 6 weeks or 8 weeks or 3 months at a time. You don't take off for 7 days and think you just scored a big hit, right? So, I mean, so their lifestyle is healthier. Mind you that their tax base, et cetera, is much higher and there's much more government intrusion. So, you know, I think what he's thinking is pie in the sky type stuff. You know, people would say, well, you know, at least he's helping somebody. That's true. But at what cost? And I don't see it working in our society unless we get our society to try directing a different way, so to speak.
Yeah. As you started giving like your little bit of an example there, you know, you could have been talking about me. Like, I mean, that was my doctor. Like, your A1C is too high. You're a type 2, blah, blah, blah. This was 4 years ago. You got to change the way you eat, John. And up until that moment, I never had a sick day in my life, right? But I had to change my diet. So I've gone keto, 5 years, strict keto, not a day off from it. You know, I'm healthier, my blood, everything. I'm still a huge person. I still eat a lot, but I eat healthier. But no lie, by the cost of my acquiring this food and preparing it has doubled my expenses for food. And
that's right.
I have to spend a lot more time preparing every meal. There's no running to the pizza shop anymore, and I love pizza, and I'm a New York City kid, the best pizza in the world. I can't have any of that anymore. I have to make my own keto pizza. You know, there is a commitment and a lifestyle you have to live healthier, in my case, because right. I chose not to take metformin or any other drug, right? I said, I want to try to avoid that. I'm going to try to do it through diet. And so far, knock on wood, I've been pretty fortunate. Cody, like, do you think that RFK sitting at the head of HHS, is that the best spot for him to advocate for healthier living? Like, okay, to the doctor's point, maybe he's pie in the sky. Would he be more effective as a public advocate just going out there and saying, like, hey, you can add 10 years to your life if you change your diet. Change to a Mediterranean diet, you'll live 5 years longer just on the basis of that. Go out and take those walks. Get off your butt. Don't sit in front of your computer all day. Or is he better positioned to do something like that, leveraging the coercive nature of the government? And is that moral? Do the ends justify the means, Hody?
No, they never do. The means always determine your end, right? It's like saying I'm going to load my gun, and if I do it badly, hey, it's okay as long as the bullet hits the target. Well, if you've killed the user, that doesn't really matter. And at the same time, the bullet's not going to hit the target if you load it badly enough.
Right.
RFK Jr. is, unfortunately, he has some libertarian leanings. Health and Human Services is perhaps one of his most statist leanings. And so it's unfortunate that for libertarians, while you might be excited to have somebody who does legitimately have some libertarian leanings in a position of power, this is the worst position for him to be in for us, because he only knows how to rule by government, right? This,
yeah.
This is his big thing. And unfortunately, and I'll be blunt about this, he's not educated enough to talk about what he's talking about. This is a guy who publicly on video just a couple weeks ago was like, look at all these ingredients. I don't know how to pronounce like riboflavin, whatever that is. That's literally vitamin B2, everybody. Riboflavin, yeah. Which he didn't know how to pronounce, is vitamin B2. And it's something he wants to ban because he can't pronounce it. Like, it's ridiculous. And then with the chemtrails, we know what these are. There are chemtrail skeptics who have, unfortunately, do you remember when the flat earthers like proved themselves wrong with that little in the documentary or whatever? They proved themselves wrong as well. They were like, hey, let's get let's put a plane through here, but I'm not going to put any of the barium, whatever they thought they were putting on the outside of their plane. And then they created, you know, the chemtrails with their own plane. Now, here's the thing. I want to agree with RFK in somewhat principle. I do think pollution is a serious problem. And as a libertarian, you don't have a right to damage somebody's body or their property. And pollution does do that. And we need to kind of understand that. Now, a lot of people can be like, oh, what? So that means government has to take control of that. No, once again, I'm going to promote a cultural change for this. Because what happens when government takes care of this? Let's look at like the Cuyahoga River. Remember that thing catching fire all the time, right? And it was very famous for catching fire. What happened when this finally went to court and got sensationalized? Government gained some control and they allowed the same manufacturer to keep polluting so long as they paid a fee. And all that did was made it so that all the smaller companies couldn't pay the same fee. And they do similar things like this today. You look at the worst polluters in the world, militaries of various countries, U.S. agricultural government specifically. Like, the government is the worst polluter we have on the planet. If you divide its individual divisions up, those become the worst polluters on the planet. They do terrible jobs with our public parks. You know, much more litter and waste and environmental debris in those than we have in private parks, right? And so what we as libertarians should do is say, listen, maybe the solution isn't big government. We still need to do something about the pollution situation, but instead of giving the government more power to tell us who and who can't breathe, who can make CO2, who can, you know, release all these things, I think that the solution is kind of just more freedom, as well as more information, as well as more education, as well as a lot more love for our fellow human, right? When we promote an environment of love instead of coercion, we care all of a sudden. We say, well, I don't want to pollute the air. That's everybody else, right? Like, and I will say, if you are going to be a minarchist, this is kind of the one time that you would want the government to step in, because it's specifically damaging people's bodies and property when it comes to pollution. I just don't happen to think the government does a very good job at it, is all.
Yeah, I tend to agree with you. Of course, Ayn Rand is probably spitting at you from her grave right now about the whole taking care of your fellow man thing. But I agree with you. Like, most minarchists would say this is a proper role of government if, say, a big industrial plant is polluting the water and carcinogens are getting into the water tables and everything, right? So I do agree with you that if there's a role for government to step in, this might be it, because there's actual harm being done. And it's being done on more than a one-to-one scale, so you need to step in. All right, we've got a question here related to the topic. William Del Pilar says, I don't see any issue with SNAP recipients being dictated because that's not their money. It's okay to have rules and regs if you are receiving government help. Same thing for welfare. They don't have to take the money if they don't want to. They do have a choice. Don't take the money and be free to choose what you want to eat and drink. And, you know, before I turn it over to you guys, I will say it's ironic that William chose to use the phrase free to choose as he ends that statement of his, because I will quote Milton Friedman on this from his series Free to Choose, where he had, when people were talking about the morality of welfare and whether government should be providing things like SNAP benefits, he always said, listen, if the government is going to have some sort of safety net, the best thing is something that what we would now call UBI, which is you give them a check and then you don't put any restrictions on them as to how they spend their money. Because if you want to help someone, you help them, you don't put conditions on it. And I tend to fall in that camp. So, and maybe this is not the popular libertarian choice, but once we get past the argument of whether SNAP exists or not, if it exists, my opinion is Give the money to those folks. Let them spend it any way they want and let them live their lives. It's going to cost more to track them down. You're going to have more of a headache. And listen, for some people, soda is not a choice. They need it for whatever reason, right? And I know in some cases you might say, oh, that's weakness or whatever. I'll give you a personal example. My son's autistic. He needs his Gatorade every day. That's all he drinks is Gatorade. If he didn't drink Gatorade, he wouldn't drink anything. And people are like, oh, it's got those stupid food colors in it. That's all the kid drinks, right? So if he were on Snap and there was something like you can't have Gatorade because it's got this food dye, which I'm sure RFK looks down upon, there'd be a problem with my son, right? He might end up in the hospital because he wouldn't drink anything. He would literally start to dry up. Now, there are some libertarians who say that's your son's problem, you know, and that's their opinion. That's fair enough. But my point is, once Snap is there, what benefit do you have by regulating what they eat and drink? I don't know. That's my opinion. Dr. Belay, what do you have to say about William's question?
You know, I would disagree with him, but I would agree with him in the sense that I think our society, you know, when many of these societals like safety net programs were created, we had a different society. I think people were more proud. They were ashamed to be standing in line asking for government help. They wanted to, you know, stand up and try to better themselves.
Right.
And now it's a matter of how can I game the system? So, you know, I get where he's coming from because you're like, wait a minute, my money's being spent. And I would agree that, you know, there's probably far too many people on the dole, so to speak. But for those legitimate individuals that are truly down and out for whatever the reason may be, I don't see that you should be able to put barriers to what it is that he or she wants to do. You know, I think government spending, I mean, the number of people I see as a physician that are classified as, you know, they have some sort of debility that they can't work is, it would just knock your socks off. And the number of people that try to obtain disability for what it is that he or she does is fascinating to see what, you know, and to the lengths at which those individuals will go through attorneys, et cetera, to try to game the system. So in that respect, I can understand why one would feel a bit upset that your taxes are being ill spent on individuals that are gaming the system. I think that needs to be remedied, rectified, but I don't think you should put barriers to those individuals. I do think the government has created this situation in the sense of, you know, giving corn subsidies, et cetera. So, of course, it's going to be cheaper to use, you know, high fructose corn syrups and everything these days, as opposed to I live in the sugarcane capital down here, right? But you don't have the same subsidies. So we've created this mess, i.e., you know, federal government picking the winners and the losers in this fight. Right. You know, so, you know, I'll go back to the whole get the government out of a lot of these things and stop a lot of these programs and only give them to people that truly need them.
Right. Cody?
I'm going to agree with William in principle that I do believe that if you're going to force taxpayers to pay for something, this needs to be moderated. It needs to be small. It needs to be reined in. But I'm also of the mindset that I don't touch a dime of the pittance that is going to the poor before I touch the overblown bloat that is going to somebody else. Like, for example, we are not always free to choose to be rich. There are many, many, many government-created artificial obstacles from it. Look at housing prices. Look at schools, colleges. Look at cars. Look at everything that keeps the market from making those things cost, I mean, less than 10% of what they currently cost now, possibly even free in some cases, medication that's saving their lives. Like, these are things that we're not just free to be rich, right? We should be. We're not, but we're not free to be prosperous. And until we get rid of all those things, I'm not comfortable just giving a guy beans and rice, the very bare minimum, and water, and just saying like, oh, I'm sorry, if you're going to be on my dime. No, you know who else is on our dime who's taken the most of it? Politicians. How about the military? How about all these corporate bureaucrats? Until Trump gets cut down to eating beans and rice for every meal, I'm not going to make my neighbor do that, right? These are my public servants. I'm not going to treat them better than the average person over here who's just struggling to make a living for themselves and their kids. So the fact that we are targeting these people and not these monsters who are blowing up innocent people with bombs and unauthorized wars is baloney, right? Like, I am absolutely not going to touch the people who are taking this small fraction snap stuff. And believe me, I, like I said, on principle, at the end of the day, if we have totally free markets, yeah, they shouldn't be receiving any money from anybody through anything mandatory. And if they are, it does need to be the bare minimum. But until I get that into that them into that situation, I'm not going after them until all the cops, politicians, crony bureaucrats or whatever have been brought to the same standard first.
Yeah, and that's also fair, right? Like, yes, like I said, we can argue whether SNAP should be a program. I just think, to the extent that, hey, you know, and Hoda, you bring a good point. That's part of the, like, just to round it back to the start. Let's see. Okay, this is a callback. That means it's near the end of the show. Use a scalpel, not a sledgehammer, right? Let's before you take the sledgehammer to the low hanging fruit like SNAP, like the welfare for like the infirm or whatever. Why don't we worry about the wars? Why don't we worry about cut all that stuff first, and then start worrying about whether you're going to take grandma's Social Security check away? So I hear yep. that. I'm 100% on that. Go ahead, Dr. Blay.
I think the take home message for much of these conversations that we have is that the duopoly, the GOP and the DNC, have created a society where they've pitted one against the other without common sense and people coming together, shaking hands, and coming up to a solution that works for everyone. And consequent to that, they have, you know, the rhetoric that goes on X and et cetera is just, it's abhorrent to see that good people would fight against one another, that if you were to sit down at a table, you'd probably agree on most of every, you know, most things with the exception of very few. And that's why this country needs third parties, and they need other individuals that are not out to simply create a name in their party so that they can sort of rise up to the ranks and to get to the power, whatever it is that he or she wants to achieve. You know, we're all on this rock for just a few years, and life is very short and very precious. And every day you're alive is a very precious day, right? And so we should basically all get together and figure out how to make this work for everyone. And I think that's where the libertarian principles come in. Is that none of the people that I've met with regard to libertarians that are truly libertarian, I'm not saying the MAGAites and that sort of stuff, I think these people are really just looking out for other individuals, but have common sense to realize that they can take care of their own and don't need a government to be intruding into their lives.
That's a great statement to end it on. Everyone, thank you for watching us here on Free For All. Before we go, Dr. Belay, thank you for joining us. Is there anything you'd like
thank
to promote? Maybe tell us about your future in politics. Anything you want to end with?
I have no clue. I really appreciate it. Thank you very much, both of you.
All right. Thank you, Dr. Belay. Hodeman, before we sign off, why don't you promote what you got going on?
Sure. Doing some stuff with Grumblings Media. Obviously, the Free For All on Thursdays has been fantastic. I'll also be we're talking about doing some stuff with the gaming side, since that is my profession. We're still working out exactly what that is with me and William, but something to look forward to, at least on the horizon. Sure. Maybe some live streaming, maybe some commentary about current games. That will be very cool. Obviously, my big one is I'm from the Love First Christians. We are a free Discord community. If you are interested in at all having difficult questions that you feel wouldn't be welcome inside of your church or that might make people feel uncomfortable, we're fine with talking about all of that. We're going through the entire Bible this year, including all those verses that people don't like to talk about, and really contextualizing them and understanding them. And it's such a diverse group. Trump voters, Harris voters, non-voters, anarchists, but with that love first unity bit, we really are helping to change the culture. It's been amazing to see people's transformations. And so if it's a place you want to just be a part of that, or if you feel you yourself need to be transformed, or, you know, assist with somebody else, it's just a great place to be. Again, it's the Love First Christians free Discord community. We'd be blessed to have you there.
All right. And for me, big old heathen John, thank you for joining us here on Free For All. Every Thursday night, 10 p.m. Eastern Time, Grumblings Media. Also catch Liberty Lens with me and Mike Tremont. Drops every Thursday morning. Until next time, everybody, catch us again. Peace.